Headliner Radio, the creative voice.
Very warm welcome to Headliner Radio. Today I'm joined by singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist and producer originally from Belfast in Northern Ireland, Gareth Dunlop. We're going to be talking about all things music. Gareth, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me on, Colby. Much appreciated.
You're welcome, man. It's a pleasure to be chatting with you today. Where are you calling from today, Gareth? And how has this week been treating you so far?
So, I'm here. I'm still based in Belfast. This week has been decent enough. Been doing a little bit of editing, been doing some recording, been finishing off a little bit of production here and there for a couple of other clients. And then I was in the BBC. Was it yesterday, the day before? I'm losing track of days, doing a podcast mix. So it's, it's like every other day in my world. It's very bits and piecey. A lot of different fires to be jumping up.
Busy times by the sounds of it, yeah. Just all in a week's work. All right, well, great. Cool. Tell us a bit about, before we talk about some of your newer projects, Gareth, I'm interested to know a bit about your background, your musical origins. Was it something you always knew you wanted to kind of pursue as a career?
Not really. It kind of took me by surprise, if I'm being honest. It was like, I wouldn't say I grew up in a particularly musical household. I mean, my sister sang. I mean, we all kind of sang in the back of the car, but it never felt like, certainly when I was younger, something that I wanted to gravitate towards. And then just, it's a very strange thing. One day I just saw a picture of an electric guitar in a catalogue, and it was like a light bulb went off. I just thought it was the coolest looking thing I'd ever seen. And I pestered my parents to buy this for me for, it might have been a birthday, and they eventually buckled. They gave in, and it's been a crazy journey ever since. It very quickly took over my existence, you know. It became a passion that was front and center, and I started delving into songwriting and singing and engineering and producing came a little bit later.
Okay. Who were some of your kind of early musical influences? Who were you kind of listening to just as you were getting into that world?
Early on, it was, you know, I wanted to turn the guitar up as loud as I could go and, you know, hang it low and play as fast as I could. Yeah. So I gravitated towards sort of Guitar Hero rock stuff, you know, a lot of Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Hendrix, Van Halen, a lot of that kind of stuff. And then I remember a neighbor of mine gave me this bunch of old vinyl. And an old vinyl player. To this day, I still can't work out why he was getting rid of it. I think he was switching over to the CD, and that was maybe the new latest thing at the time. And I got all his old vinyl. And I remember looking at Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks. I remember looking at the vinyl and thinking, wow, that looks really cool. I wonder what that sounds like.
Yeah.
And that was another one of those like light bulb moments. It was like, oh, wow, oh, that's amazing. I wanted to start experimenting with more acoustic stuff and start trying my hand at, you know, writing my own songs. And that was a whole new road to go down. So the electric guitar got put away for a while, and that was the great folk scare of my early teens. Yeah.
So, I mean, you've worked with a pretty eclectic mix, I would say, of artists. I'm just reading here, Gareth Faith Hill, Tim McGraw, T.I., obviously kind of similar and opposite ends of the spectrum, but all pretty big artists. How did you end up writing for those kind of names once you started engineering and producing, like you mentioned?
So that all came around. I got this opportunity through a local festival here in Belfast. Belfast and Nashville are sister cities, which was something I didn't know back then. So I got this. I got the chance to go out to Nashville and learn a little bit about, you know, the industry and all the kind of all the cogs and parts. And I played a show in the Bluebird Cafe out there. And by chance, a publisher was there who took a shine to, you know, what I was doing, what I was singing about. And she invited me back out a couple of weeks later, and that was the start of a very long relationship with Nashville for around, yeah. It must be 10, 12 years, I was splitting my time between home here in Belfast and the States, mainly Nashville. And out there, I became staff writer for a couple of different publishing houses.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a strange world out there. It's a very creative space to be in.
Mm.
There's a lot of people beating that pavement, writing songs for, you know, for touring country artists. And, sometimes, you know, two co-writes a day, and a lot of those co-writes were, you know, they start with, "Hey, nice to meet you. What are we writing about today?"
Yeah.
And, Tim McGraw was looking for a song. There were some parameters there that I had to kind of fit in. You know, he already had the, you know, the love song. He had the big life song. He had the friendship song. Mm. You know, it can feel quite sort of formulaic, but they were looking for a duet song. And what can I say? We were lucky. They wanted to use the song that got written.
Yeah.
And with T.I., that one really took me by surprise. I mean, I don't listen to a lot of rap music. Mm. If I'm being completely honest, I mean, I'd heard the name T.I. and stuff, but that was something that came out of nowhere. I had an EP, like a 10-inch vinyl that I put out maybe, it was about a year before that had happened, and there was a song on it called Lay It Down. It was like a gospel kind of throwback R&B thing.
Yeah.
Somebody at his label played it for him, and the next thing we heard that he wanted to sample it. He wanted to use the track and do his thing over, which was just so crazy. You know, the magic of that stuff ever happening is never lost on me.
It's funny, isn't it? Just it's one person coming across your record by chance or what have you.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Mm.
But fantastic, yeah. I've been reading, and you know that your songs have been placed in a lot of films. Have you got any favourites that you were involved in? There's quite a few there on that side as well.
A couple of favourites. A big one for me would have been I got a song used in House.
That's a good show.
My dad was obsessed with watching at the time, so being able to turn around to him and say, "Hey, you know, you're never going to guess, but you know, the final episode of the show, they're going to use one of my songs," and he was amazing, completely beside himself. So that was a great moment. One that I always loved, I wrote a few songs for the TV show Nashville. And it was always interesting because I would be submitting those songs very bare bones. I mean, sometimes even just sang into a phone.
Yeah.
It was the cast who would be, you know, interpreting the songs. And I think at the time it was Buddy Miller, who was the musical producer on that show. So hearing what Buddy, you know, did with a pretty rustic, phone demo, and what he turned it into for the cast to sing was always.
So you would just provide the vocal, and they would sort of craft a song for an episode off of that kind of thing.
I'd write the song, and I'd grab a guitar sometimes, sing it into a phone, or if I was close to a studio, if I was here at home, I'd put together a very, you know, very quick demo. But most of the time, it was either just me on the piano and singing, or me on a acoustic guitar and singing. And then, the cast would then sing that song, and the production around that could turn into, you know, pedal steel and, you know, fiddles and drums and bass and you name it. It could have been the whole kitchen sink thrown at it. It was always amazing to see somebody else's interpretation of a pretty small idea.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think when you're making music for TV and film, it's got to have a kind of cinematic quality about it, maybe. Mm. And you know, it's got to be able to kind of, like you say, kind of be able to build a narrative around it. Sound and music being super important in shows. So it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those parameters are, I mean, in a lot of ways they're forever changing. What somebody's looking for a very, very particular scene.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is a lot of the time, certainly on most of the shows I worked on, they were all dealing with the big themes of life. They were all dealing with love and loss and past and future and friendship. And, you know, so there were a lot of songs that I might have written for one particular scene and one particular TV show that didn't work. It just didn't, you know, it didn't cut it. But, you know, fast forward a year later and it's found its way onto a completely different TV show, which is, you know, it's that old, you know, songs don't really have a shelf life, which is kind of comforting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. To know that, well, once your work's out there in the world, it's the wonders of the internet, isn't it, as well? It's always going to be accessible. But I was just reading here, Gareth, I know you've been on some, just to segue slightly, I know you've been on some pretty big tours as well, on the road. Was that as like an engineer or more as in a producer role, like Van Morrison, Stereophonics?
That was on an artist role. That was me up on stage singing my stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been really lucky, really fortunate. They've opened up for a few heroes of mine.
Yeah, awesome.
I got just last year, it was a real pinch me moment. I got the shout to open up for Bonnie Raitt in the UK, which, you know, looking back, Bonnie Raitt was somebody I watched on. It was an old VHS of the old Grey Whistle Test, and she had a performance on there of Too Long at the Fair. And I can see myself at, like, you know, 14, 15, watching that and rewinding it and just being completely mesmerized by her performance on that. So to be able to open up,
yeah, fantastic,
for her was this very a very special thing.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. I mean, I want to talk about your album as well, Gareth. It's your third studio album coming out, Welcome to the House of I Don't Know. It's out in June. Mm-hmm. How did that sort of come together from a creative standpoint? Is that already done, ready to go now? I know you've just released have a single coming up as well.
Yeah, it's all done. It's all mastered and it's in the bag. And we're just, we're in the throes of the release schedule now.
Awesome.
We're a few singles deep and there's a couple more to go. And then, the whole thing drops on June 14th, I believe. You know, my feeling going into this record was that I didn't want to make the same record twice. When I did the last record, it was pretty much during lockdown, and a lot of the stuff played on it was, I mean, it was me bar a couple of overdubs, and it was a real labor of love. I really enjoyed it. I'm really proud of it, but I wanted to kind of let go of the steering wheel a little bit with this one. I wanted to get into a room with a band, and I wanted it to feel like it was, you know, the capture was coming straight off the floor. And try to ignore some of my own habits. When I was doing the last record, it was, you know, it was back to the drawing board more times than I probably needed to go back to the drawing board, because there wasn't that, there weren't musicians around me to kind of bounce, you know, those immediate ideas off, and that kind of gut reaction wasn't really present on that record. But this time around, as I say, I wanted it to feel like, you know, guys in a room just throwing down and going on that gut reaction energy of, is this cool? Are we on to something? Everyone's smiling, everyone's nodding.
Yeah, old school kind of in the moment.
Yeah,
stuff.
Let's not overthink this too much. Yeah. So it was that was my first thought kind of going into it. And my second thing that I wanted to make sure of was that, I work on Pro Tools, a digital audio workstation, DAW for short. And the guys that I cut this record with, they're all on Logic. And I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but put me in front of Logic and it takes a hell of a long time for me to do the most basic stuff. So the option was there whether I would, you know, sit in the chair on the engineer side, or whether I would buy out and just not, you know, kind of have my hands tied behind my back a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what I chose. I chose to be, guys, you know, you go ahead with Logic. I don't know much about it, and I'll focus on what's happening on the, you know, in the live room.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nerve-wracking in a lot of ways. It was really kind of relinquishing a big old comfort blanket.
Yeah.
But looking back, it was the right move.
Yeah. I mean, that leads me quite nicely onto what was going to be my next question about your kind of creative process, and when it comes to songwriting and stuff, like where do you usually start? Is it like a melody or chord that sort of kind of starts something off for you, or more lyrically driven? I'm guessing it's more start right on instruments. You write on a guitar or piano, as you mentioned.
Most of the time, yeah. It's strange. It happens for me. It's a lot of different. It kind of happens in different ways. I keep a lot of notes on my phone, yeah. So you know, I could be out, you know, just everyday stuff, and there might be an idea that comes to mind. I'll jot it down. And other times, yeah, I'll be sitting at the piano or sitting at the guitar, and there might be a musical kind of little motif or something or a melody. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. Just, you know, trying to coax the fairies out from the hedges any way you can. it's kind of my MO. But yeah, most of the time I'll start with one. So I normally have, you know, three pages in front of me when I'm trying to put a song together. And the first page is just a lot of loose ideas. And the second page is maybe trying to refine those ideas a little bit. And usually the third page is where, you know, the form of things, you know, on the lyric front start to come together. But, you know, with this record, there were a lot of things, you know, I didn't bring anything to the band, to the other producers, dressed up. Mm. I brought it very much stripped back, and, you know, here's the song pretty naked. Here's it, and it's, you know, I guess, purest form. So there were a few songs there that, you know, started out as ballads and turned into, you know, higher tempo bangers. And then vice versa, there were songs that I thought were going to be like, yeah, you know, this is going to be the moment in the set where, you know, where the fireworks go off and the confetti cannon gets fired, you know, and they turned into ballads. So
yeah,
it's interesting. It's strange how things can kind of shape-shift.
Yeah, for sure. Exciting times, though. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot going on for you this year. It sounds like busy times. I know you're going to be touring a little bit as well.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you want to chat a little bit about that? I wanted to maybe stay on the technical chat a little bit. Having mentioned Pro Tools, and maybe talk a little bit about your setup at home or when you're in the studio. Have you got any kind of favorite bits of kit or plugins that you use that you kind of tend to go back to, you know?
Yeah. So here at home, I have a large format Audient console.
Heritage.
It's beautiful in line, real nice.
The Heritage, did you say?
Yeah, the Heritage, yeah. It's, you know, it sounds great. I kind of prefer having limited choices when it comes to outboard. I like the color of that console, and everything for me ends up in the box anyway. After the console, so it's, you know, there's color choices for days with plugins and everything else. I prefer the architecture of having a console in front of me as the front end.
And
of course I'm on Pro Tools. That's kind of just what I've always known. I'm monitoring through a set of Focals, the SM9s, which I really like. I think they're great monitors. They sound great in my room. And a bunch of mics. I like ribbon mics. I'm a big fan of ribbon mics. At the moment, let me see, what am I favoring? I'm really, really enjoying the Jay-Z V67. Beautiful mic for vocals. It's a damn near perfect mic for most things. I have a couple of vintage mics that get pulled out every now and again. Outboard wise, there isn't really much to speak of. There's a couple of SSL X-Racks, which mostly just hold some dynamics in there that are looped into 16 channels of the console.
Yeah.
And there's a spring reverb unit, a spring thing, I think the name of it is. And yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of about it. I mean, most stuff, especially for film and TV, that needs to be recalled and tweaked and edited. You know, the idea of recalling a bunch of outboard compressors and a bunch of outboard, you know, effects racks is just that would completely fry my head. So, getting everything to a point where it's in the box is
a lot more manageable.
It's a lot more manageable, yeah, certainly for recall.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, yeah, let's talk about tour. I kind of started that and then got sidelined with tech chat. But yeah, you're going, is it going to be just a kind of local one? Are you doing Nashville as well and a bit of the States?
So no, not at the moment anyway. I mean, there's some chat about maybe trying to do some stuff over there in the fall.
Okay.
But at the moment, we have it's a UK tour lined up.
Nice. Okay.
In the last couple of years, I've been out opening up for so many folks, and it's usually just me, or you know, at most me and my guitar player, Pete. So this time we're going out with a full band, full production, and see if we can.
Awesome.
See if we can make some racket. That's
yeah.
The plan.
Yeah,
we're gonna starting in June 12th in Liverpool, and then we're 13th in Birmingham, 14th we're in Bristol, 15th London, 18th then we have a little bit of a break. We're in Sheffield, the 19th we're in Manchester, then 20th Newcastle, 22nd we're in Glasgow, and then we finish up in here at home in Belfast.
Nice.
On the 28th.
All the big ones.
Ones, yeah. And places.
Yeah, awesome, man. Awesome. Something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah. It is indeed, yeah, absolutely. There's nothing like it. I mean, it's great. I love the studio. I love the whole process of putting records together and trying stuff out and throwing stuff at the wall. But, you know, where the rubber meets the road, that's where it happens on stage. Yeah,
absolutely. Nice one, man. Is there anything else you're looking forward to this year, Gareth, music-wise, life-wise? Before I let you go, I think that's most of the things I wanted to talk to you about on the kind of work front. But yeah, is there anything that you're looking forward to?
You know, I'm just kind of this is a big year with a new record, and I'm not too sure what's around the corner. You know, the hope is that as many people get to hear it as possible, and obviously, yeah, that they buy into it, they like it, they love it, as much as I love making it, and whatever comes from that is a bonus. So outside of that, I guess probably more writing. I'm never too far from the console in the studio, so potentially some other production work, and hopefully a lot more on the live front.
Awesome. Yeah, busy times. Well, it's been fabulous chatting with you, Gareth, and thank you so much for your time. Gareth's third album, Welcome to the House of I Don't Know, will be out in June. Until then, Gareth, for the purposes of the podcast, we'll say our goodbyes now. It's been so great catching up. But yeah, all the best, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Colby. Pleasure talking to you.
And you, Gareth. Take care.
Headliner Radio, supporting the creative community.